content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Woodward from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from The Week magazine, the best of the U.S. and international media each week. The Triangle Radio Reading Service thanks Charlie and Carolyn Kerr for their support of today's reading of The Week magazine. This program honors Charlie's sister, Bonnie Cassidy, who continues to be a true inspiration to their family. And we are in our second reading out of the May 18th, 2018 issue of The Week magazine. We'll pick up a short main story that we didn't get last week and a few other odds and ends that we don't always get to. So we start with Trump fixer linked to Russian oligarch. What happened? President Trump's longtime lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, faced new legal jeopardy this week after a disclosure of financial records showed that Cohen was paid $500,000 by a firm controlled by a Russian oligarch, Michael Avenatti, a lawyer for porn star Stormy Daniels, posted documents online detailing the 2017 payment by New York investment firm Columbus Nova to Cohen's shell company, Essential Consultants, the same shell company used by Cohen to pay Daniels $130,000 to stay silent about an alleged affair with Trump. Columbus Nova's biggest client is Russian billionaire Viktor Vekselberg, who was interviewed earlier this year by special counsel Robert Mueller's team as part of the investigation into Russian election meddling. Columbus Nova said it hired Cohen to consult on potential investments in real estate and other ventures, and that Vekselberg, who attended Trump's inauguration with Columbus Nova's CEO, was not involved in the decision to hire Cohen. Cohen also used Essential Consultants to collect more than $3 million in payments from several corporations with business before the Trump administration. AT&T, whose merger with Time Warner is being challenged by the Justice Department, said it paid Cohen $200,000 to provide insights into the new administration. Drug giants Novartis paid him $1.2 million for advice on how Trump might approach U.S. healthcare policy. The company said it was contacted in November by Mueller's office and cooperated fully. Cohen is reportedly under investigation for bank fraud and election law violations. What the columnist said: the possible reasons for Columbus Nova's payment to Cohen run from brazenly corrupt to far worse, said Jonathan Chait in nymag.com. Like all Russian oligarchs, Vekselberg works in cooperation with the Putin government, and his payments might have given the Kremlin numerous sources of possible leverage over Cohen and Trump. Could the $500,000 have been a bribe, in return for which a favor would be expected? Or perhaps Russia knew the payments went to a slush fund for silencing Trump's mistresses, another source of kompromat. It's no mystery what corporations sought from Cohen, said Timothy O'Brien in Bloomberg.com. Trump and his family have essentially hung a for sale sign on the White House by refusing to meaningfully separate themselves from their own business interests. That fact hasn't been lost on companies that have dealings with Washington, and Cohen provided a useful and relatively cheap way to get close to the president. In Trump's swamp, you pay to play. This is what a Trump smoking gun might look like, said Jed Sugarman in Slate.com. Proving quid pro quo bribery and conspiracy against the U.S. will be extremely difficult. But this new evidence of Russian payments strengthens the proof for probable cause, which is the standard for warrants and indictments. And that will pressure alleged co-conspirators such as Cohen to flip. In turn, they may help a jury, the public, and perhaps Congress find proof beyond a reasonable doubt. We're going to read a number of the U.S. at a glance and the world at a glance pieces that we don't always get to. Starting with a note from Sedona, Arizona, McCain's visitors. Senator John McCain is putting his affairs in order and reflecting on his career as he battles brain cancer at home, the New York Times reported this week. The 81-year-old former GOP presidential nominee has been receiving a steady stream of friends from both sides of the political aisle at his Sedona ranch, including Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, retired Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman, and former Vice President Joe Biden. McCain reportedly encouraged Biden, who is considering a 2020 presidential run, not to walk away from politics. He has also expressed regret about picking Sarah Palin over Joe Lieberman as his 2008 running mate. McCain has also made it known that he doesn't want President Trump, who infamously mocked the senator's time as a prisoner of war, at his funeral. McCain allies have also quietly sent out feelers about his eventual Senate replacement, signaling that they'd like it to be a McCain person. This from Pahoa, Hawaii. Lava flows. Hundreds of Hawaii residents fled volcanic eruptions on the state's Big Island this week as rivers of molten rock and clouds of toxic gas poured into neighborhoods. 14 fissures have opened up in and around Leilani Estates subdivision since last Thursday after a crater on the Kilauea volcano collapsed. Lava flows have so far destroyed at least 36 structures, covering an area equivalent to more than 75 football fields. Parts of Kilauea volcano have been erupting continuously for more than 30 years, and scientists don't know how long the current eruptions will last. Some residents have placed sacred tea leaves in the cracks in the earth that have emerged as an offering to Pele, the Hawaiian volcano goddess. "The land doesn't really belong to us," said one evacuee. "It belongs to Pele." From Washington, D.C., Pruitt under siege. White House aides are reportedly urging President Trump to fire embattled Environmental Protection Agency Director Scott Pruitt. Pruitt is now facing at least 11 federal investigations into his conduct on a wide range of ethics concerns, including lavish spending on domestic and foreign travel and a controversial condominium rental agreement involving the wife of a lobbyist. At least five senior EPA staff members have resigned in the past month. Republicans increasingly see Andrew Wheeler, the newly confirmed EPA deputy director, as an acceptable replacement to Pruitt. A former coal lobbyist, Wheeler would be able to pursue Trump's aggressive deregulatory agenda without drawing as much attention as Pruitt. Trump himself is reported to be growing frustrated with Pruitt, reacting angrily to a report that Pruitt's staff tried to leak damaging information about Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke in order to divert attention away from Pruitt's scandals. Charleston, West Virginia. Voters sink Blankenship. Republican leaders breathed a sigh of relief this week after West Virginia voters rejected a controversial former coal baron running in the GOP Senate primary. Don Blankenship, who served a year in federal prison after being convicted for conspiring to violate mine safety rules following an accident that killed 29 miners, placed third in the race, losing to the more establishment-friendly state attorney general Patrick Morrissey. National Republicans feared that Blankenship was sure to lose in the general election against sitting Democrat Senator Joe Manchin, who is otherwise seen as vulnerable in deep red West Virginia. President Trump personally implored voters not to nominate Blankenship as state polls showed him gaining ground. The former coal executive, who claimed to be Trumpier than Trump, was sharply criticized for racist ads that attacked Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's China family, an apparent reference to McConnell's wife, Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao. from Paris, fury at Trump. The French were appalled this week as President Trump's insinuation that the 2015 Paris terrorist attacks would have been less deadly had the French victims been armed. Speaking at the NRA convention in Dallas, Trump slammed France's strict gun control laws and then made a finger gun to simulate the jihadist attacker's slaughter of 130 people at cafes, restaurants, and a concert hall. "They took their time," he said of the terrorists, "and then gunned them down one by one. Boom, come over here. Boom, come over here. Boom." In a statement, the French government expressed firm disapproval of Trump's remarks, adding that looser gun laws don't stop terrorist outrages, but instead facilitate the planning of this type of attack. Trump also blamed tough British gun laws for a rise in stabbings in London. This is from Caracas. "Leaving the club, Venezuela has pulled out of the Organization of American States, saying the regional group headquartered in D.C. has returned to its original condition as a colonial body at the service of Washington's ambition for dominance in our region. Days earlier, Vice President Mike Pence had called on the OAS to suspend Venezuela and asked Caracas to cancel its May 20th sham presidential election, in which leftist President Nicolas Maduro is seeking a second six-year term, and to organize real elections. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo called Maduro a dictator who cripples his economy and starves his people. Some 1 million people fled Venezuela from 2015 to 2017 as the country's economy collapsed and food became scarce." This is from Armenia. From protester to premier, Nikol Pashinyan, the ex-journalist who led mass protests that toppled Armenia's government, has been named prime minister. Jailed for political protests in 2009, Pashinyan, 42, was elected to parliament in 2012 as one of just a handful of opposition figures. 6 weeks ago, he started walking across the country to protest then-President Serge Sargsyan's attempt to skirt term limits and hold on to power by having the legislature name him prime minister. The march ignited nationwide demonstrations, and Sargsyan stepped down last month. After continued mass protest in Republic Square, a legislature dominated by Sargsyan loyalists elected Pashinyan leader. "Your victory is not that I was elected as prime minister of Armenia," he told supporters, "but that you decided who should be prime minister of Armenia." And we'll go back and pick up a few of the columns, starting with one from David French at nationalreview.com. "The growing disdain for civil liberties. It's not enough to defend the civil liberties of those with whom we merely disagree," said David French. "Americans must learn to defend the rights of those we hate. In our polarized partisan debates about free speech, the presumption of innocence, and the rule of law, the most important question for too many people is, who wins? On campuses across the country, liberal activists have defended their right to shut down conservative speakers while by arguing that free speech is being used as a cover for racism. Meanwhile, many of the same conservatives who complained about political correctness stifling their voices were also cheering President Trump's call for the NFL to terminate football players who kneeled during the national anthem. Liberals gleefully seized on the possibility President Trump will plead the Fifth Amendment in the Russia probe as proof that he must be guilty. That's no less un-American than Trump himself saying in 2016, "If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?" The Constitution guarantees certain unalienable rights, but that will mean nothing if Americans don't agree civil liberties belong equally to everyone. If we can't do that, those rights will be lost. This is from Argentina. The unborn we can't afford. While the Argentine legislature debates whether to legalize abortion, said Martin Beintrub, pundits are tiptoeing around one glaring fact. The procedure is already widespread. Abortion is currently available only to rape victims or to save a woman's life. But illegal abortion is part of our culture. Health officials estimate that 500,000 Argentines terminate their pregnancies every year, and thousands are hospitalized as a result of complications from unhygienic procedures. Abortion foes who want to bring that figure to zero need to ask themselves, would the country be able to absorb and care for 500,000 additional unwanted children every year? That is the population of an entire new province. Are there enough families willing to adopt such a large number of children? Already the country lacks sufficient schools. If there were no abortions, we would need to double education infrastructure within a decade. Illegal abortion, then, is solving a population problem for us without forcing any pious soul to trouble his conscience by voting for legal abortion. Yet the solution is the definition of hypocrisy. Abortion is everywhere, and the health and lives of the poorest women are paying for it. We must stop being hypocrites and save the lives not of fetuses, but of women. Israel preparing for war with Iran. Iran and Israel are on the verge of an all-out war, said Richard Spencer in The Times from the United Kingdom. Both sides are adamant their own red lines have already been crossed. Israel says it won't accept the establishment of a permanent Iranian military presence on its doorstep in Syria. Yet it is already happening. Iran's elite Revolutionary Guard, which has helped prop up Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad during his country's seven-year civil war, is bedded down in the country and has trained some 80,000 paramilitary fighters there, including Shiite Muslim militants from Afghanistan, Iraq, Lebanon, and Pakistan. Iran, meanwhile, wants revenge for several recent airstrikes on Iranian bases in Syria, which have destroyed some 200 advanced missiles and killed more than a dozen guard members. U.S. President Donald Trump's pullout from the Iran nuclear deal this week will only exacerbate the threat to Israel, said Michael Kaplow in Haaretz from Israel. Until now, the only thing preventing Iran from attacking Israel from Syria has been the knowledge that such a strike would cost Tehran the support of Britain, France, and Germany, the three Western European countries that signed the 2015 agreement. If that deal is dead anyway, such concerns are irrelevant. The scuttling of the nuclear agreement removes a key restraint on Iran's conventional forces. Any war will inevitably be very destructive and very disruptive, not only for Israel and Iran, but for neighboring states, said Hillel Fritsch in the Jerusalem Post. Since Iran has no real air force and its ground troops are far away, a conflict will likely begin with Iranian forces in Syria and the Iran-backed Hezbollah militia in Lebanon firing thousands of missiles at Israel. In retaliation, the Israeli Air Force will aim to cripple the Iranian ports of Karg, through which 90% of Iran's oil and gas exports flow, and Bandar Abbas, which handles most imports. And Israel might feel compelled to attack airports in Lebanon, Syria, and even Iraq to prevent the movement of Iranian troops and equipment. Retaliating against Iranian offensive is one thing, said Nahum Barnea, but purposely provoking such an attack is another entirely. Yet that is what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu seems to be doing. He has deliberately moved his red line so he can tell the world Iran is breaching it. First, it was no arming of Hezbollah in Lebanon. then no Shiite militias near the Syria-Israel border, and now no Iranian presence in Syria at all. Israeli strikes on Iranian sites in Syria are extremely provocative. Yet last week, the Knesset gave him the power to make attack decisions in consultation only with the defense minister, not the whole cabinet, as was previously required. As Netanyahu goads Iran, he has an obligation to make the risks, the intentions, the goals, and the price clear to the Israelis who will bear the sufferings of war. We're on the technology page now. This is a feature we don't usually do. It's called Bytes, B-Y-T-E-S, What's New in Tech. First, when criminals use drones. Criminals are deploying drones to nefarious ends, from aiding robberies to thwarting FBI stakeouts, said Patrick Tucker in DefenseOne.com. Law enforcement agents say they've seen an uptick in criminal crews using small, commercially available drones to surveil robbery targets and spot security gaps at bigger facilities. Some criminal organizations have even begun to use drones as part of witness intimidation schemes, continuously watching precincts to see what is going in and might see who is going in and might be cooperating with police. In one incident last year, small drones swarmed an FBI hostage rescue team on the outskirts of a large U.S. city in an effort to flush the rescuers from their observation post. Evidence agents say that the devices are being used in the service of increasingly elaborate crimes. Time to change your Twitter password. Twitter is calling on all of its 336 million global users to change their login passwords, said Eli Blumenthal in USA Today. The company announced last week it had uncovered a bug that stored passwords unmasked in an internal log. Twitter said that it has since fixed the bug and that an investigation found no indication of breach or misuse by anyone. Even so, it is urging all users to swiftly change their password, not only on Twitter, but also on any other service where they may have used the same password. While you're at it, consider setting up two-factor authentication to add further protections to your account. Spotify bolsters its free service. Spotify has unveiled major changes to the free version of its app in a bid to fend off Apple Music, said Aaron Griffith in Wired.com. The streaming giant, which went public to much fanfare last month, is the leader in streaming music with 157 million global users. But Apple Music is adding subscribers at a faster clip and could take over the number one position in the U.S. as early as this summer. So Spotify is leveraging its greatest advantage in its defense, its free tier. New features, previously available only to paying subscribers, including personalized artist and song recommendations, as well as on-demand access to playlists, will now be available to Spotify's 86 million non-paying listeners. Free users will also be able to opt into a data saver feature that caches songs Spotify's algorithm predicts they will want to hear, allowing them to minimize wireless data usage when streaming. And also on the technology page, an article titled Social Media: Facebook Joins the Dating Game. Watch out, Tinder, said Kaya Yarif and Sarah Ashley O'Brien in CNN.com. Facebook wants to help people find love. The world's biggest social network announced last week that it is launching a new dating feature that will target the 200 million users worldwide who identify themselves as single. Users will be able to set up a separate dating profile, which won't be visible to friends, and will be notified of events and groups related to their interests. People with the same interests will be able to message one another in a private messaging inbox. The move into the dating world follows Facebook forays into a broad array of online businesses, including its marketplace feature that competes with Craigslist and its takeout feature that challenges Seamless. Still, this announcement feels curiously timed, said Deepa Sitharaman and Georgia Wells in the Wall Street Journal. Facebook has been battling questions about how it handles users' data and privacy, so now seems an odd moment to ask people to hand over even more sensitive personal information. The competition was quick to offer some mocking jabs. Their product could be great for U.S.-Russia relationships, said Joey Levine, CEO of IAC, which owns a majority stake in Tinder, Match, and OkCupid. Who will actually use this feature? Asked Carrie Paul in MarketWatch.com. Older people, that's who. Industry experts believe Facebook could provide a comfortable platform for divorcees and users over 40 who may be less likely to use another online service. Older users are the one group where Facebook is still seeing growth, said James Temperton in Wired. Young people are ditching Facebook in droves. In the U.S., nearly 3 million people under 25 are expected to sign off the social network for good this year. But almost 3 million Americans over age 35 are expected to join, with the largest growth coming in the over 65s. And the dating feature is expected to encourage those users to spend more time on the platform. Moving into dating isn't much of a leap for Facebook, said Lisa Bonos in the Washington Post. For years, couples have been meeting and connecting on the network, and many go on to marry and have children. The Facebook-owned Instagram has also been known to be an accidental matchmaker, serving as a kind of portfolio for your dating life. In many ways, Facebook is just making explicit something that's already happening implicitly. Maybe so, but after recent privacy scandals, I'm not sure why users would ever trust Zuckerberg and company with their love lives, said Emma Tytel in the Toronto Star. I understand that the social network is desperate to revamp its image and is trying to shift focus from the political to the personal. But by wading into a market that virtually guarantees the collection of even more personal data, it opens itself up to further public scrutiny and possible scandal. We'll pick up a few more of the health and science short pieces. Here's one titled Exploring Mars Interior. Having spent decades analyzing Mars' peaks and valleys, NASA is set to investigate what lies beneath the red planet's dusty surface. The space agency's InSight robotic lander was launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California last week, reports Space.com. If all goes to plan, on November 26, the lander will touch down on Mars and begin a two-year data-collecting mission. Unlike NASA's robotic geologist rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, InSight will be stationary. The spacecraft is equipped with a highly sensitive seismometer to detect Mars quakes and meteorite impacts, and a large heat probe that will bore roughly 16 feet into the ground and measure temperature changes over time. In essence, the probe will take the vital signs of Mars, says NASA's Thomas Zurbuchen, its pulse, temperature, and much more. While Earth is geologically active, scientists believe the red planet's interior hasn't changed much since it formed 4.5 billion years ago. InSight should shed new light on how Mars and other rocky planets evolved. How to live a decade longer. Want to provide your life expectancy? A new Harvard study suggests that people can add more than a decade to their lives by adopting five basic lifestyle habits: not smoking, eating a healthy diet, exercising for 30 minutes a day, maintaining a normal weight, and limiting alcohol intake. Researchers analyzed the medical records and lifestyle surveys of more than 123,000 adults over roughly 30 years. They found that the more of these five habits people took on, the longer their lifespan. The men who had adopted all five by age 50 lived 12 years longer on average than those who took on none. Among women, it was 14 years. These people were also 82% less likely to die of heart disease during the study period, and their risk of death from cancer fell by 65%. The researchers noted, however, that fewer than 2% of those surveyed stuck to this healthy way of life. The question is how to improve behavior, senior author Frank Hu tells the New York Times. We need dramatic changes in food, physical activity, and social environment to make healthy choices more accessible, affordable, and normative. Push for personalized medicine. Federal scientists are seeking to enlist 1 million Americans in an ambitious attempt to develop a more personalized approach to health care. So-called precision medicine harnesses genetic information and other data to produce treatment targeted at specific individuals. The All of Us research program, which is being run by the National Institutes of Health, will create a massive trove of data that should help researchers understand why some people are affected by disease while others are spared, and why certain therapies work for some but not for others. Enrollment in the $1.5 billion scheme began this week. Volunteers have to hand over their medical records, provide blood and urine samples, and have their genome sequenced. First approved in 2015, the project has raised concerns among data privacy advocates, especially after police in California revealed that they used an online DNA matching genealogy service to find and arrest the man alleged to be the Golden State Killer, who raped and murdered multiple women in the 1970s and 80s. NIH officials say the program's data won't be subject to subpoenas and search warrants. This is something we thought about, Francis Collins, the agency's director, tells the Washington Post. We knew this was going to be an issue in getting people comfortable. We often read some of the best columns. These are a few of the best business columns of the week. Economy, America's job market puzzle. The job market hasn't been this good for a very long time, said Nathaniel Meyerson in CNNMoney.com. The unemployment rate dropped from 4.1% to 3.9% in April, the lowest level since December 2000, the Labor Department reported last week. Employers added 164,000 jobs in April, slightly below what economists were expecting, but better than a comparatively sluggish March. Most of the hiring happened in professional and business services, which grew by 54,000 jobs. Manufacturing added 24,000. A triumphant Trump tweeted, 3.9% unemployment, 4% is broken. Yet the report also contained a now familiar disappointment, said David Dayan in NewRepublic.com. Stagnant wages. Average hourly earnings ticked up just 4 cents in April, for a total of about 67 cents, or 2.6% over last year. It makes sense that bosses don't like increasing pay, but periods of low unemployment when businesses have to compete for workers are supposed to force their hand. The last time the labor market was this tight, wages rose by an annual rate of more than 4%. Our current state of affairs is not how the economy is supposed to work. The fact that workers haven't gotten bigger raises this far into one of the longest expansions on record remains a puzzle, said Catherine Rampell in the Washington Post. One possible explanation is that there is more slack in the economy than the unemployment rate suggests. There are still a lot of working-age people sitting on the sidelines who aren't counted in the official statistics. Wages won't rocket up until the ranks of those would-be workers are exhausted. Higher-earning baby boomers are also retiring en masse and being replaced by mostly younger, cheaper counterparts, which could be skewing the wage figures. I think the recession is still casting a shadow, said Paul Krugman in the New York Times. Employers are loath to cut wages, even when times are desperate, because it's considered demoralizing and unfair. But they're also reluctant to increase paychecks in good times because they're afraid of being stuck with those higher wages if the economy turns bad again. That would explain why companies are increasingly offering one-time bonuses over raises, because it offers them more flexibility than permanent salary hikes. Wages aside, the U.S. economy appears to be enjoying a Goldilocks moment, running neither too hot nor too cold, said Harriet Torrey in the Wall Street Journal. But if unemployment runs too low for too long, inflation or dangerous financial bubbles could build. The last three times the jobless rate fell below 4% for more than a few months, in the 1950s, 60s, and 2000, the U.S. got one of those outcomes, followed by a recession. Federal Reserve officials are now watching for the labor market's sweet spot, the moment when unemployment falls to its lowest level before inflation starts increasing, at which point they'll start boosting interest rates more aggressively. If the Fed lets the unemployment rate fall too far without taking action, it could be hard to manage what happens next. When joblessness gets very low and then starts rising, it tends to rise a lot. Rooting for Barnes and Noble. At first glance, Barnes and Noble's struggles seem like a classic story of business disruption, said David Leonard. A massive brick-and-mortar chain, literally the model for the evil corporation crushing independent bookstores in You've Got Mail, gets laid low by e-commerce. Such is capitalism, right? Except that's not the full story, which actually involves Washington's leniency under both political parties toward technology giants that have come to resemble monopolies. For most of U.S. history, the government considered massive corporations problematic and something to be restrained. Then in the 1970s, a new idea took hold. Size was not a problem so long as prices remained low. But this theory has two major flaws. Low prices aren't the only things that matter to consumers, especially if wages stagnate. And prices often rise once a company has run its rivals out of business. Such is the case with Amazon. Its artificially low book prices have created a raft of problems in the publishing industry, and now it's hiking the cost of its Prime membership by 20%. I am admittedly a happy Amazon customer, but I'm starting to see how corporate behemoths can produce a less vigorous economy. Sometimes it pays to support the newly little guy, and that's why I'll be rooting for Barnes and Noble. Trump's trade confusion. There's a basic problem with Trump's approach to trade negotiations, said the Washington Post. No one, not American trading partners, not American business, and not workers, can tell whether the president actually would accept a compromise on his often extreme demands. Even if you grant that there is some strategic value to using threats as a negotiating tool, the downsides of the uncertainty Trump has injected into the global trading system seem to outweigh any upside. A two-day meeting last week between U.S. and Chinese officials aimed at averting a trade war ended with an agreement to meet again later, and little else. Part of the problem is that the U.S. delegation paired its reasonable demands with arbitrary ones, including a $200 billion reduction in the bilateral trade deficit by the end of 2020. Trump seems to believe that using uncertainty as a weapon will result in concessions from Beijing, just as he seems convinced it will force Canada and Mexico to yield on his NAFTA demands. In reality, our northern and southern neighbors are hedging against Trump's unpredictability by pursuing closer economic ties with China and Europe. NAFTA talks have now gone on so long that there's a danger Congress won't have time to ratify any new agreement before the midterms. If that happens, Trump may have no plan B. Well, I'll go to the Talking Points page and get a couple of the articles we didn't get to last week. The first one is called Trump's Lies, Do They Matter? Well, it turns out President Trump was lying the whole time, said Noah Rothman in USA Today. About what? Take your pick. For months, Trump denied any knowledge of the $130,000 hush money payment to his lawyer Michael Cohen made to porn star Stormy Daniels during the 2016 election. But last week, the president's new attorney, Rudy Giuliani, revealed that Trump not only knew about the transaction, but also reimbursed Cohen for his trouble. Separately, Harold Bornstein, the president's zany former gastroenterologist, revealed that the hyperbolic letter he released during the election proclaiming Trump's astonishing health was in fact dictated by the patient himself. Oops. Trump's mendacity is reaching new heights, said Tom Nicholson in Esquire.com. Last week, he notched his 3,000th false or misleading statement since taking office, according to the Washington Post comprehensive tally. That amounts to 6.5 lies every single day. His lying is actually escalating from 4.9 falsehoods each day in his first 100 days to 9 a day in the past 2 months. The most shocking aspect of last week's revelations was that they were not at all shocking to the nation, said Stephen Collinson in CNN.com. Trump's loyal base, who dismissed the media's reporting and fact checks as irretrievably biased, probably didn't believe or care that he was lying. The rest of the country is essentially resigned to the fact that our president is a compulsive and habitual liar. And having seen the exposure of his many lies does not affect the blind loyalty of his base and most congressional Republicans, Trump has learned he can get away with anything. Maybe in the short term, said the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. The problem may come when there's a genuine crisis, a nuclear showdown with Iran or North Korea, and the president needs the country to trust him. With Trump's track record, Americans may not believe anything he says. The other question is whether Trump is a political anomaly or the start of a new era, said Matt Lewis in thedailybeast.com. Since Trump has gaslighted the country so dramatically and so successfully, will future political leaders also embrace lying as a deliberate strategy? Have voters become so tribal that lying just doesn't matter? Americans used to vote out the bums in Washington who lied to us, but maybe we'll grow accustomed to living with them. Marx, how he changed the world. Happy birthday, Karl Marx. You were right, said Jason Barker in the New York Times. The German philosopher was born 200 years ago this month, but his criticisms of capitalism are as prescient as ever. Today, liberals have more or less embraced Marx's depiction of capitalism as a class struggle in which the ruling class minority exploits the labor of the working class majority while sharing little of the profits. it's easy to see why. Last year alone, 82% of the wealth generated worldwide went to the world's richest 1%. Modern social justice movements like Black Lives Matter and hashtag MeToo can also be traced to Marx, who believed in challenging the structure on privilege, the structure of privilege. His revolutionary thinking lives on. Marx may continue to inspire leftist idealists, said James Bovard in USA Today, but Marxism in practice didn't work out so well. Marx assumed a classless, altruistic state would arise after capitalism was swept away. Instead, murderous dictatorships such as Soviet Russia and Maoist China filled the vacuum. More than 100 million people died in the 20th century under the ruthless communist regimes he inspired. Marx's defenders, of course, will argue the real thing hasn't been tried, said Noah Smith in Bloomberg.com. But history shows us time and again that revolutionary communist regimes result in either crimes against humanity, grinding poverty, or both. Consider Venezuela now in full economic collapse, despite its rich oil reserves. Instead, the most successful examples of socialism have been applied incrementally from within the democratic capitalist system. Almost all rich countries now have progressive income taxes, universal public education, and laws against child labor, all things that Marx demanded in 1848 in the Communist Manifesto. Marx accurately diagnosed many of capitalism's biggest flaws, said The Economist, but he didn't understand its strengths. Capitalism drives down the price of consumer goods, giving workers access to things that monarchs once considered luxuries. Thanks to capitalism, the number of people in extreme poverty has declined from 1.85 billion in 1990 to 767 million in 2013. Touchingly, he imagined that as capitalism became more and more destructive, the workers of the world would unite, said Robert Kuttner in HuffingtonPost.com. Instead, workers frustrated by globalization and automation are embracing ethnic nationalism from Hungary to Britain to the United States. Poor Marx could never have predicted Donald Trump. On lighter notes, here are a couple of It Must Be True, I Read It in the Tabloid pieces. First, a Wisconsin man who already holds the Guinness World Record for eating the most Big Macs last week scarfed down his 30,000th signature McDonald's burger. Don Gorski, 64, has eaten at least one Big Mac a day since May 17, 1972, and insists that his health hasn't suffered because of his fast food diet. I weigh 190 pounds, and my cholesterol is 165, he says. I'm healthy as a horse. The retired prison guard says his wife wants him to eat more fruit and vegetables, but he isn't interested. Last year, he notes, I ate some corn. After a shoplifting suspect who used Play-Doh to cover anti-theft devices at a Massachusetts Walmart was arrested after police found his fingerprint in the clay-like toy. Dennis Jackson, 55, allegedly covered several of the security devices in Play-Doh, hoping that it would muffle the equipment's alarm. Police say they were able to identify the suspected thief thanks to a very good fingerprint in the multicolored clay. The proof is in the Play-Doh, said a spokesman for Hasbro, which makes the product. And we'll move on to some business news, the news at a glance. First, trade. Firms suffer blow on Iran contracts. Global companies that made big bets on doing business in Iran are poised to lose billions of dollars in contracts after President Trump's decision this week to reimpose sanctions on Tehran, said Ed Crooks and Sam Fleming in the Financial Times. The U.S. company with the most to lose following Trump's withdrawal from the 2015 Iran nuclear deal is Chicago-based Boeing, which has signed deals to sell about $20 billion worth of commercial planes to two Iranian airlines. Boeing's European rival, Airbus, which uses many U.S. parts in its aircraft, will be hit even harder. It has contracts with Iran Air worth up to $27 billion. European firms plunged back into Iran more quickly than their American rivals after the nuclear pact took effect, said Benoit Faucon and Sarah Kent in the Wall Street Journal, hoping to tap a largely untouched market with potential for fast growth. Germany's Daimler and Siemens and the British Dutch energy company Royal Dutch Shell are now scrambling to reassess their strategies and are weighing contingencies, including potentially abandoning their investments. French oil giant Total, which has a $1 billion deal to develop an offshore natural gas field, is lobbying French officials to obtain a U.S. waiver for the project. Nike execs depart over harassment. Five more Nike executives left the company this week, part of a sweeping overhaul of management amid widespread allegations of harassment and discrimination against female employees, said Julie Creswell and Kevin Draper in the New York Times. Six Nike executives had already left or announced their departure. Those leaving now include the expected successor to CEO Mark Parker and managers of high-profile departments such as footwear and sports marketing. The company has been rocked by an internal investigation detailing how women at the company have felt marginalized, harassed, and thwarted in their careers. Nestle and Starbucks strike coffee deal. Nestle and Starbucks are partnering to create a global coffee alliance, said Rishi Iyengar in CNNMoney.com. Nestle, the world's largest food and beverage company, will pay Starbucks $7.2 billion for exclusive rights to market, distribute, and sell the U.S. chain's packaged coffees and teas in supermarkets around the world. With Nestle's massive global reach, the deal will give Starbucks more exposure in international markets while handing Nestle, which already owns Nescafe and Nespresso, a bigger stake in the coffee business. Comcast seeks to disrupt Disney's Fox bid. Cable giant Comcast is preparing a $60 billion hostile bid for 21st Century Fox's entertainment division, hoping to secure an arsenal of shows and movies to combat growing digital rivals Netflix and Amazon, said Greg Remoulidis and Liana Baker in Reuters.com. Fox has already agreed to sell those assets to Disney for $52.4 billion in stock, and Comcast hasn't yet made its offer, which would be all cash. But if a federal judge approves AT&T's acquisition of Time Warner on June 12th, Comcast will see the ruling as a signal that it wouldn't face its own antitrust hurdles, freeing it to make a move. When the boss overshares. CEOs have long tried to keep their insecurities and failings out of public view, said Rachel Feinsieg in the Wall Street Journal. But some executives are finding that bearing it all, even the bad stuff, can be good for business. When James Rhee took the helm of Ashley Stewart, a nearly bankrupt plus-size clothing chain, he confessed at an all-staff meeting that he was the least qualified person to run the company and that he desperately missed his out-of-state family. His openness unnerved some workers, but others walked away inspired. Experts say that leaders who admit such vulnerabilities can breed loyalty. Rand Fishkin publicly blogged about his insomnia and depression while a CEO of Moz, a Seattle-based marketing software firm. Staff said it caused heartburn, but also camaraderie. Whatever your dirty skeletons in the closet are, Fishkin said, just open the closet and show everyone. Walmart challenges Amazon in India. In a major bet on a vibrant but risky new market, Walmart announced this week that it will take a majority stake in India's leading e-commerce platform, Flipkart, said Vidhu Goel in the New York Times. The $16 billion deal will plunge America's largest operator of physical retail stores into direct competition with Amazon. In India, Flipkart is the online market leader, but Amazon is rapidly gaining steam there. The move is a gamble for Walmart, which has stumbled in e-commerce efforts in the U.S. The number of people in India with enough income to shop online is still tiny. A quarter century ago, there were 56 teenagers in the labor force for every fast food restaurant. Today, there are fewer than half as many, reflecting both teenagers' decreasing participation in the workforce and the explosive growth in the number of fast food restaurants. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of the week. Be sure to listen again next time. I hope you have enjoyed it. This is Fred Woodward reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The Triangle Radio Reading Service thanks Charlie and Carolyn Kerr for their support of today's reading of the week magazine. This program honors Charlie's sister, Bonnie Cassidy, who continues to be a true inspiration to their family. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Questions or comments? Give us a call, 919-832-5138.